Remember that we went ahead and covered the biblical view of work, and we went through a number of issues relating to how God looked at work. We looked at the problems that we encounter in the process of work, and we were trying to get through some areas that were solutions. In other words, once you had gotten into a situation and you wanted to solve your particular problem, then what do you do? Now, I have jotted down a few items here which I think could be a good process for you to go through on solving some of your problems that you may have with work. Now, again, a number of these issues will be covered as we go through the quarter, but let's just review this a little bit as to how you can start now in a practical way of making some adjustments. Okay, so let's just go through these very briefly on the handout that I've given you. First of all, in order to solve any problem, you have to identify your problem. And so the first thing I would do in identifying the problem is to simply recognize God's sovereignty in your current circumstances. Because many of us often would say, well, listen, should I even be in this job? Should I be doing this kind of work? And there's an issue and a struggle that goes through as to whether or not you're in the will of God right now. So I would go through this little series of questions that I've put down here. For instance, I would ask, am I in God's will, so far as I know? The second thing, is the job itself sin? I think there may be some jobs that just simply do not contribute to anything to society and may even be involved with things which are directly contrary to what the Scripture teach. So I would suggest that just evaluating that's an outside chance, so to speak. Then you ought to ask the question, what have I done to make the job hard? Now, some people have a unique ability that regardless of when they open their mouth, their foot goes in one after another. And you simply can't communicate well without offending someone. Well, it's important to recognize that if that is your type of personality. And it's important to recognize that if there is a pattern that you need then to maybe take some action with yourself, and it has nothing to do with the job. For instance, when you identify a problem, if it's a similar one that you've had two or three times in other jobs or other circumstances, that would be a good indicator that you're the source of the problem and not the job. And there are things then you can do, and some of the discussion that we have today on interpersonal relationships would be helpful. The next question is, do I witness by how I work? Now, you remember that we talked about the attitude of excellence. And so the idea that doing things well when you do them and of being a witness by how you personally work. I was in a job one time where it was while I was in college and I was working for an aircraft company as a draftsman, and I was witnessing to everybody. Well, the boss had to tell me he'd prefer that I worked. Now, he didn't know what I was doing and so forth, but I lost my testimony, I believe, in that circumstance because I did not really concentrate on work, and I'm glad I had that happen to me, you know, when I was about 20 years old, so that it was a lesson that would be very clear in my mind so that I would learn to work hard and to witness by how I work. Another question I would ask is, what are your motives? In other words, why are you in that job? It may pay tremendously, but if money is your motive, it may be a question. If promotion is the thing you're looking for, it may be some question on motives. Now, later in our term, we will be going into a lesson on ambition and ability, which will examine motives, and so I'll get back into that again. The last question on that little section on God's sovereignty is, does it cost my life? You see, some jobs do cost your life. I remember an illustration of a young man in the Middle East who was involved with our Navigator Ministries, and he graduated from the American University at Beirut. When he graduated, he went to Kuwait and took a job with a chemical company. And the boss, the head of the company, called him in when he reported to work, and he said, when you come to work for this company, the company is your God. You have to give up everything else and give yourself totally to the company. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, I already have a God. And I can't, company cannot be my God." Now, see, we know no one would say it like that in our culture, but in the East, Middle East, and Far East, and especially in Japan, you go with a company and you're practically married to that company. I mean, it is something for life. You do not job hop. Well, the young man said, "Let me make you a deal. I will work for you for a limited period of time, making the company second in my life and making my God first in my life. And if I don't do better or as well as the rest of your people in my category, then you can fire me and there will be no hard feelings." Well, the young man went to work. He had good ability. He did a superb job and, in fact, was put in charge of sales in the Middle East for that company. God honored his stand, and he did not bow to the pressure of making it his life. In the military, a number of times, we know that you have to do certain things in order to get ahead, you know, certain kind of jobs that you and I both know are not necessarily relevant to the accomplishing of the mission. And in fact, under a new effectiveness report system that I know the Air Force has enacted, there are a lot of things going on like that. And you're having to do things perhaps to get ahead. And I've done a lot of counseling in the recent year with young men wondering whether they should do a lot of extra stuff just to get a good report. Well, those are things that you have to consider. And if your job is costing you your life, 12, 14, 16 hours a day, you might question whether or not that is God's will. Now, the second thing under identifying the problem is to just realize if you really are doing substandard work. Now, there are two reasons for doing substandard work. One is slothfulness, that you're just plain lazy or you don't care. The second is you may not have the ability to do the standard work in that job. There are certain jobs that if I was put in it, I would not be able to do the job. I'd get somewhere near substandard in that job, and I would have to recognize that I don't have ability in that job. And so you need to be realistic as to the kind of job that you're in. The third item is bad relationships could be the problem. Now, if you have a problem with relationships, that's what we're going to discuss today. The fourth is the grass is greener syndrome, and we mentioned that at the beginning. The idea that if I could just change my circumstances, things would be better. And the last is a resentment toward authority. Now, I may or may not get into a detailed discussion on that. I'm having to struggle with whether we want to go into that. But I think there is a great deal to be learned by recognizing the various authority structures that each of us have to live under. And let me give you a quick brief. I don't have my notes here on it. First of all, there's employer-employee authority. The boss is the boss, no matter what. And he has certain objectives, and you're hired to help them reach those objectives. And so there is a clear authority structure that is there. It really gets confused in a Christian organization like the Navigators, where there's business to be done at our headquarters, but yet people expect a different sort of expectancy of how things function. Well, when you're working with business items, they are very little different. Hopefully attitudes will be a little different and you'll approach it slightly differently, but there still is an authority structure. The second authority is that of the government, and we all live under it, whether it's good or bad. And you remember in the book of Colossians, it says, it gives instructions to slaves to be obedient, whether to good masters or bad. It does not make a differentiation. And it is true that there will be things that will be wrong. And when there are things that are wrong, you may or may not be able to correct them. And we could discuss later what the purpose is of your being there in the first place. So you've got the employer and the government. You have a type of a spiritual authority that you would have to consider, family structure authority. So those four are the four authority structures that every single Christian must live within and must respond to. And if you don't respond properly to those authority levels, then you will not be happy in your life and in your job. it will infect the rest of your life. Okay, let's go on rather quickly here to point B. I think it's important for people to surrender their job to God. That's a lordship decision. I was with a young man yesterday who's a fairly young Christian, and he's an insurance salesman, and he's lived his life in a dog-eat-dog circumstance where you were going to be first and you were cutthroat with the other salesman, in a sense. And then he became a Christian, and his life began to reverse. And he is going through some struggles. He is trying desperately to be honest in everything that he does, and it's changing his whole life. Even the secretary gives him a bad time when he writes up a premium when it's a large business corporation, and he said, I know that I can set the premium at various levels, and I have to set it such that I don't hurt the company or hurt the customer. And the secretary accused him the other day of trying to make too much money. And so you see, in trying to live by a Christian principle, he is running into opposition at various times. But the fact is, he's doing it. The next one is C, to change your work habits. And I've listed three things that I think would be worth your thinking about. Think of what you can give to the job instead of what you can get. You are getting the pay. So think of what you can give. Think of what can you learn, not just in work, but in every area of your life. And think of who can you serve. I would set goals for your future, both in your job and in your career, because your job that you're in now may not necessarily be your career over the long haul. And a key here, I believe, to give us a perspective of where we are is to pray for your coworkers daily. Really pray for them and ask God to impact in their lives that they would become Christians. F is know your own gifts and abilities. And the last is very important, that we need to be team men or women, that when all the chips are down, we're going to go with what needs to be done in that job and be part of the team instead of being a prick in the side of the authority structure that's there. Doesn't mean you don't express opinions, but it does mean being part of the team. Okay, those are the things that I mentioned last week at the last of our class and wanted to review with you. Now I would like to go into the section of study that has to do with resolving conflict with people. Interpersonal relationships is just a fancy name for relationship with people or getting along with them. Now, somehow you don't have a relationship with other than people. Some people have a relationship with a dog, I realize, but it's rare that you have a real one that's two-way. You don't have a relationship with things or with business. Now, in your mind, you may feel comfortable in certain circumstances, but the only thing you can have relationship with is other people. And it's interesting that very few of us, in fact, almost none of us, really become satisfied with our relationships. I had a situation yesterday where I realized that in a relationship that one person thought I was a certain way toward them in terms of my attitude, when that wasn't part of what I meant at all. And so I realized that I did not communicate properly in a relationship. And I would say that all of us at all times have two or three strained relationships that we must resolve or that we must live with. Now, some people have more. If your personality is such that you tend to offend people, and you know, God made your personality like it is, you can change it, but you simply recognize that you are built like that, and therefore you take the proper guards so that you don't offend people as easily, as quickly with your mouth. Some people answer very quickly and are misunderstood. Another person walks up, does exactly the same thing, and everybody thinks it's fine. You say, well, it's just what I said. They got mad at me and didn't at him. And I can't define what that chemistry is, but I think we have to recognize that it is there, and you must recognize how you come across to others. Others are rather businesslike and not the backslapping type, and therefore people don't get too close to you. Or at least they don't feel that way. You may not feel that way inside, but yet that may be the circumstance. So all of these are issues with which we have to deal in interpersonal relationships. Now, it's interesting that even though most of us are recognize that we are not happy with our relationships, most people are not willing to act, but will rather just live with the status quo and let it go on and on. And the ultimate of this is that in all of our relationships, the closer you get, the more you'll be disappointed in an individual. And the more people get to know you, the more they'll be disappointed. That's why marriages often break up, because the only thing that overcomes that disappointment is love. Because we all have faults, and we're all good at shielding our faults, and therefore we often do not let people inside our lives, because we know those faults will be revealed. And so if you just remember that if all you're doing is looking at it at a humanistic viewpoint, that people will disappoint you. At some point in time, they'll just fully foul up your expectations. Now, if you have a pattern of bad relationships, that is, you may get offended easily, and you're either offending people or being offended, we need to learn to adjust. For instance, if you're a person who is easily offended, then you have to learn how to raise your tolerance level to offense. The more mature a Christian is, the less easily that Christian is to be offended. I mean, you practically have to hit him with a board on the side of the face in order to offend him. And I really believe that's a mark of spiritual maturity, is that we do not become offended easily. I think Jesus was like that. And we would read in 1 Peter that Jesus, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And so I would suggest that if you want one key thing to pray for in terms of this interpersonal relationship, is to pray that you will allow your tolerance level to being offended to be raised. And you know what one key is in this? I'm getting a little ahead of myself. One key is not imputing motives to what others say or do. Because most of us, when someone says something, if we have a little bit of a bad attitude toward them in the first place, we automatically assume that they meant harm. And we just, man, you just run it in. And then you go to bed that night and you review that conversation 10 times, and it becomes very glamorous after a while. What was one sentence becomes a book, because you know what's underneath. And you build that thing up, and it is an impugning of motives. Okay, now what I'm going to be doing today is not so much husband-wife interpersonal relationships, though it applies in that context. Men to men, women to women, and men to women. It's going to be general in that sense. I'm not going to get into how husband and wives communicate, though all of these things apply to that. You see what I mean? But I want it so that it is primarily in your job. That's my focus. Now, if you take all these things and apply it in a marriage, they will also work. But there are other nuances that come in to the marriage relationship that I don't want to get into in this particular time. So first, let's go to the biblical basis for interpersonal relationships. I do not like to go to psychology books to figure out how people ought to relate to one another, but we want to go to the Bible. So if you would turn to Philippians chapter 2, please. Okay, in Philippians chapter 2, we read, beginning in verse 5, "Have this attitude in yourself, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross." Now, the key to relationships is attitude. Obviously, the key prior to that is your relationship to God himself and being a Christian. But in the attitude, there are three things that we see. First of all, there is the attitude of love. Have this attitude. And you say, what attitude was in Christ? Okay, here we see that he loved us so much that he gave himself. So the attitude of love. Now, if you cannot love someone else, then you will have a very difficult time having a relationship. Now, many people talk to me about personality conflicts, and I occasionally think there are personality conflicts. Love overcomes that. Now, that doesn't mean they would necessarily be your bosom buddy, you know, someone that you just love being with, because I think there is a natural interface of certain personalities. But nevertheless, the fact that there is some personality abrasion that takes place is no reason not to love someone or to get along with them. So love is the first key. The second is humility. The fact that Christ humbled himself. And I think one of the most important things in interpersonal relationships is that you're able to humble yourself and to say, I apologize, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? It's hard for me. It's hard for any of us. Even when you may not have been the cause. Or to just simply ask, have I offended you? You see, it takes humility to put yourself down and raise up another person. And the last in this little passage is servant, that you're willing to serve others and that you're willing to give your life to other people. So what is your motive? Well, Colossians 1:28 you can jot down as a motive. And the motive is to bring every person to a point of spiritual maturity. That's the motive for all of our relationships, is that we would bring every person to a point of spiritual maturity. In Colossians 1:28, let me just read it. And we proclaim him, admonishing every man, teaching every man with all wisdom, that we may present every man complete in Christ or mature in Christ. So the end product of your relationships is to lift up the other person and make them a more mature Christian. Now let's go to verses 1 through 4 for just a moment, because though 5 through 8 is the basis, he gives the results in verses 1 through 4. If therefore there is any encouragement in Christ, if there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Now, the things that we see here is, first of all, unity. Now, where you have interpersonal relationships that are bad, there is obviously not unity. Yet, there is to be unity among the body of Christ and even with others. Because the scriptures talk about being in good reputation to those that are without the body. We are to have one purpose. And then there's a little sequence of the do actions. Now, when I talk about do things, it's rare that just an attitude will make a bad relationship. The only way a person can discern your attitude is by what you say or by what you do or how you respond. So having a bad attitude, though it's not good, you can take care of that before God and not communicate it outward. There are days you get up where you just hope you meet nobody. Because if you do, it's going to be a tough deal for all of you. And so you have to deal with that before God. But then if you meet someone before you've dealt with it, then they bear that brunt and you're living with some sort of a strained relationship for a week. Whether it's a friend or a wife or whatever. Now notice in verse 3, it says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit. Now we know we live with pride and we live with selfishness. But as you recognize it, you deal with it, and what you're not supposed to do is you're not supposed to act upon it. Because in verse 3 it says, do nothing from these motives. Now we know that the motives may be underneath, and you deal with those spiritually. But it says, don't let those come into an action circumstance. And the things you're not supposed to do, and the basis of them, the bad actions, selfishness and empty conceit. I'm reading from the New American Standard on that. And the last thing, in verse 4, it says, don't merely look out for your own interests, but look out for the interests of others. And so a key in relationships, if you are really interested in other people, then it will be, it'll have a good basis of relationship for the future. Now, there are many other passages we could have gone to. For instance, we could have gone to Matthew 5 in the Beatitudes. We could have gone to John 13 in the 34 and 35 on love. We could have studied 1 Corinthians 13 based on the concept of love because it's basic. All I did was take one passage that deal with relationships in the Scriptures and show you how we can go through that and see how it relates to all these areas of relationships. If you'll notice that so many of the problems through the Scriptures come about not because of bad relationships. Most splits in churches and organizations are not doctrinal. They're personality. They're the people that can't get along. They're because one person or the other will not admit being wrong. Both probably are. And there is not reconciliation. Okay? Now let's go into a section of a thing that I would call levels of relationships. Now it is important to realize that not every relationship will be the same. And by the way, I doubt if I've got anything in anything I share with you that is totally new and unique that I have not gotten from someone else. And this I think I have stolen from George Sanchez. That's where I heard it the first time in terms of communication. And I want to share it with you because many of us expect to have a high level of relationship. Now there's a certain person, and I think a melancholic fits into this, one who is of a melancholic personality, who will only tolerate a relationship that is very deep and cannot live with a surface relationship. Well, the fact is that most of our relationships will not be deep, but they can still be good. The melancholic person becomes frustrated with surface relationships and wants to get deeper and has only very few deep relationships. And that person has to work very hard at making a different level of relationships. There are other types of people who could care less about relationships. They don't need any. And you really operate well alone. And you just love to read and to study or to be alone and not to have to extend yourself. I don't know what personality type that fits into. I know I have tendencies in that way, though my wife would not believe it. But there are times when I just want to go sit in a corner and don't want to talk to anybody. And I have changed that such that I have to be interested in people and am willing to let others inside my life. So one thing that's so important is that every relationship is two-way. But relationships are built on communication. There is no relationship where there is no communication. And if you do not communicate in some way, you will not have a relationship. And so the communication types that I would like to share with you are these. The first level, and the level that's the lowest of relationship, is cliché. Most of us live with cliché relationships. Hi, how are you? Have a good night's sleep. How you doing today? How's your family? And they're not very meaningful. And if all you have are cliché relationships, it's bad. But cliché relationships are important. And almost all of us, no matter how deep the relationship is, work on clichés to begin with. What clichés are the probe. You come in and say, how are you doing this morning? Shut up, I don't want to talk to you. Well, that tells you something. They may not say it like that. You walk up and you say, hi, how are you doing? Crummy. And you probably will not go any further in that conversation. Whereas if he says, oh, fine, then you go to the next one and you say, well, did you have a good weekend? Yeah, I think it was pretty good. And see, you remain cliché for a while until you start getting in on something that's meaningful. And so the cliché relationship, though if that's the only level you have, it will frustrate you to no end. It's the most comfortable level. And especially when you hear about it, that there is a deeper level, you start trying to probe. And one of the things is that we often try and probe too fast at the wrong times. And that's something we need to learn. The second relationship level is third person. You're discussing things in the third person. It's not I think and you think, but they think, they do, they did. and you're always talking about something that is non-threatening to either one of you. You know, what's happening in the world and news and various things, or maybe about children or whatever it may be, but it's third person.
The next level is facts or opinions. This is the level at which you begin to expose yourself, where you expose in a conversation and you say, well, I don't really think this was a good deal. And if they come back and shoot you down immediately, you hop back up to third person and cliche. You see? You reveal a very non-threatening thing. And very often in a situation that the things that occur later in a conversation are the most important, especially if it's a one-on-one conversation. And each of us have to learn to be willing to reveal ourselves and give facts and opinions about ourselves, what we think. The fourth level is that of feelings. That is, I feel this way. It may not be logical, it may not be factual, but here's how I feel. This is a very important one in husband and wives that women want and men can usually do without. It's a strange combination, but the fact is that there, all of us do need to have opportunity to express our feelings without being attacked. Now, I have a very difficult time at times, I know with Mary and I, if she expresses her feelings, I want to attack it with fact. Say, but that's not logical. And that simply doesn't make sense. If you just went 1, 2, 3, 4, you'd obviously not feel that way. Well, see, no matter what the facts are, the feelings remain essentially the same. And if you're a type of person who are fairly maybe organized in your thinking and not particularly emotional, then you will have a hard time both accepting and expressing feeling. And I think there's a little bit of a tenderizing that needs to be done in our hearts in those kinds of circumstances where we become more sensitive to the needs of others and more permissive to allow people to express how they feel and then forget it. In other words, when people express how they feel and you know they're giving you a feeling response, don't come back 2 days later with a legal document as to what they said and hold them to it, because that is not the purpose. What they think and what they feel may be very different. What you think and what you feel may be very, very different. And we have a right to feel in a certain way. It may be a wrong response, and we want to get help in having not having those wrong responses. But at some point, as the relationship deepens, we need to be able to share those feelings. And then the latter, and I'm not sure how to describe it, is open or total communication. And I think that occurs at any one time in a person's life. I think it would be rare if you had that total communication with more than two or three people. A question? Do you have a question somewhere? Yes. Yeah, you definitely can, because you may feel crummy, but your mind has the total logic figured out. See? In fact, you may know the answer to everything, but yet you feel a different way. Discouragement and despair is very much like this. No amount of logic changes that gut feeling inside. Or have you ever had a morning where you get up and you just feel terrible? Somehow you're discouraged, you cannot figure it out. You cannot figure out what happened, but yet you feel that way. So your thinking is different from your feelings. For instance, in areas let's say business or administration within a church or in a business, there are certain tender spots that you have in your life. And the minute somebody says something about, for instance, some people are super sensitive to any criticism of another person, especially that relates to abilities and gifts, you know, a judgment level, say, well, I don't think they can do it. What right do you have to say that? But yet in your own mind, you know they're right. Did you see what I mean about the fact that your feelings will react when your mind does not? Okay, now what you need to do when someone reacts to you in a feeling circumstance, you need to give them time to let their mind control their feelings. I had a circumstance this week where I talked with someone on the phone. I mentioned one thing and they fired up and shot this thing back, and it took 40 minutes before the whole thing turned around. It was just talking. I did not react for once in my life and come straight through on it and just waited. And before you knew it, the mind had changed the feelings. Whereas if I had ensued in an argument at that point in time, it would have been disastrous for our relationship. Not disastrous, because we had a good relationship. But it would not have been particularly good. Do you have any questions, further questions on that? Is that difference between the mind, what you think, and what you feel? Okay, now let me just mention where I think most relationships will occur. I think you're only going to have one or two or three at any one time, an open and total communication, and they are temporary. In other words, one of my close friends that I went to school with, we had very open and total communication for several years, but when we were separated for a number of years, we lost that. It's not bad, and we have occasionally come back into it. But yet a lot has happened. We do change, you know. Now, I think that in the feeling level, that more and more people should react to you that they can share with you, and that you ought to have a few more there. I believe in number three should be somewhere near the norm for a Christian, that you ought to be very accepting and be able to discuss things fairly openly. One and two are things you should use as steps to getting into three. But I think four can be very common for most Christian relationships. It will be uncommon in the business world, because many people will not open up. There's not the same base. So in the business world and with non-Christians, I think you'll have a few that the feelings will be there. And the point is, you may not be able to totally share yours, but you ought to accept theirs. But then you ought to be able to operate with them totally on the basis of facts and opinions, but you must recognize their feelings. Okay, let's go on to causes for bad relationships. First of all, causes of bad relationships. The first thing when you have a bad relationship is to check your personal walk with God. If you are not having some daily time with God, a quiet time, something where you're getting input from the Scriptures, then I think that could be the cause in you of the bad relationship. When you're not walking with God, you will have bad relationships. The second thing is sin in your life. If there is an area of your life that you are clearly holding back from God, I believe that it is a point at which you will start seeing evidences in terms of bad relationships. Thirdly, you need to go into how the problem developed. When you have a bad relationship, try and go back and say, now, where did that begin? Most often, it will have begun with the tongue. Either something you said to them or something that was said to someone else that got there. Another cause is impugning motives, that you have impugned motives that were not there. See, every one of us want to have the ability to say something and not be misunderstood. But the fact is that communication is incomplete, and we have to depend on the acceptance of the other person to understand. In fact, there's a phrase that comes in to every one of our communications almost every day. We say, well, do you know what I mean? Isn't that something that you often will say? You may say it in a different relationship, a different set of words, but every one of us pauses and tries to get a response at whether this person knows what we mean. Not what we said, but what we meant. Or do you understand? Or is that clear? And the better the relationship, the less you have to say that. And most of us in our communication are not trying to communicate facts, but some feeling. And when every time we open a mouth, we get motives impugned, we become offended. Because, you see, the Scriptures are fairly clear that we're not to judge other people's motives. Actions, yes, but not necessarily motives. Another cause may be that you just have not been praying for that individual. And in bad relationships, if you are not praying for them, that they can develop even into worse relationships. So the principal causes of the bad relationships are sin in your life, The tongue, and you can turn to the book of James and get a lot of stuff on that. Pride, Proverbs 13:10, only through pride comes contention. Or is that Proverbs 18:19? Someone, pardon me? Only by pride comes contention. And in fact, that, if you want to get to the biblical source, that's what it says, that contention and bad relationships come only as a result of pride. Well, Proverbs 13:10 and Proverbs 18:19, I had them both written down. 13:10. Pardon me? 13:10, that's what I thought it was. Only through pride comes contention. And the last in principal causes is just an unwillingness to open up your life. Perhaps to admit that you're wrong is a problem. Now, what do we do to build better relationships? Let's talk in this last portion now on some steps you can take for initiating relationships, developing relationships, maintaining relationships, and repairing relationships. Okay, I'm going to go through this fairly rapidly, and if I do it fairly rapidly, it'll give us about 5 minutes to answer questions. Now, I have them out on various little slides, and so you can jot them down as we go, and then you might want to ask some questions. Okay, first of all, in the area of initiating relationships, let me give you a verse. Proverbs 18:24 said, "He that hath friends must show himself friendly." So the first item that you have in initiating relationships is to take initiative. Now, I have a difficult time doing that. I force myself to do it, partially because of the ministry I'm in, and I know that I need to do that with people. I always, in fact, yesterday in a little meeting, there were a meeting of, 25 people. There were about five or six that I knew fairly well, and at the coffee break, who did I talk to? The five that I knew pretty well. You know, even though I know that I ought to press out and get to those new people, it is an effort to initiate relationships. But we need to do it in order to build relationships. The second thing is we desperately need informal situations other than just meeting someone after church or our business. Informal situations are the best place to initiate relationships. And therefore, I urge you to use your home. Your home is the best place to initiate good relationships because it's where people see more of you than they will see anywhere else. You know, when you work with certain men or women exclusively and never meet them as a couple or meet them in another environment, You almost think it's kind of like you meet someone in someone's family, like a boss's family. It's that strange. I never thought of you as having a wife and children. You know, and that becomes it. Your relationship is so surface and so business that you can't think of them as having any other circumstance or relationship. So I think your home is a good place. And this may be a key to initiate relationships, is be genuinely interested in them. There is something about it, a sense that people will feel when they realize that you are interested in them as a person. And that's why big groups are hard. It's very difficult on me, even in this circumstance, when I know I'd like to talk with each one of you or with a number of you, but yet I know that the relationships are, 30 seconds long or 15, and I become concerned then that I am not really being interested because of being pressed for time. So we need to back off at certain times and learn how to concentrate on one person. And I have seen in men who do this well and people who do this well, when they're talking to a person, it doesn't matter if there are 25 people standing around trying to interrupt, their total focus is on that individual. And it's a unique ability that I believe all of us need to develop. Is when we're talking to someone, give our full attention to them and be genuinely interested in what they are saying. That's tough, I know, but it's an important thing. The next thing is in the area of developing relationships. Okay, now, we must realize that not every relationship is, should be, or will be developed. I mean, none of us can take relationships with 150 people that are deep. There's just not enough time in life to do it at any one time. Therefore, what is your reason for developing relationships? Okay? There are usually a couple of good reasons. One is for your personal benefit and for theirs. That there are needs, either your needs or their needs. And when we think of motives in developing relationships, let's be just a little bit careful in this. In Proverbs 14, verse 20, it says this, "The poor is hated even by his neighbor, but those who love the rich are many." You see the reason for getting to know certain people, either because of status or money or whatever the circumstance may be. So what is your reason for developing a relationship? If it's just a concern for them or you like them, that's fine. To meet their needs or perhaps to get your needs met. The second thing is that relationships must be two-way. There is no such thing as a one-way relationship. And that's obvious with our Siamese cat. There is no two-way relationship even possible with that beast. One time I was holding it when it was a kitten, and it bit me on the nose, and that broke our relationship for life after it came back from the alley. But yet my daughter has a tremendous, she just loves it. It has no response. Now, we as people are similar. We want love, but we don't want to give it. And that is why I'm putting this so important at this point. We need a two-way relationship. So you think of what you would like to have in a response from another person in terms of a good relationship and work in your own life of giving that kind of response. Probably one of the most important things other than communications in developing a relationship is that it takes time. And it takes specific effort. You've got to work at it. And it takes varied types of contacts. It can't be done just at work or just with a one-time dinner engagement in your home. And very frankly, there are things of common interest that will draw one person to another. Now, let me just go into the area of maintaining relationships rather quickly. I'm not doing too well on the time, but I am very near the end. I think in maintaining relationships, it's important that we recognize just several things. And let me just put these all down directly so that you can look at them. Let me not get to the repairing yet. Remember that the relationships will be varied in intensity. That's one of the strains of marriage, is to realize that even the marriage relationship varies in intensity. Secondly, is that there needs to be an honesty in the relationship if it is to be maintained. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. Remember that it takes both spiritual contact and social contact. If all your contact is social, playing Monopoly and Risk and whatever it is in your home at night, and you're just doing things together and there's never a spiritual interaction, then I believe that will not be a good relationship for Christians. On the other hand, if you always have to be talking about some heavy doctrinal deal or the latest spiritual problem or whatever it is, and you never just have fun, I don't think that will be a good relationship either. I think we need to be peacemakers. When our friends are having conflicts with others, let's be a peacemaker, or when there's conflicts between us. I think another thing is to be accepting, that we want to be accepted for who we are and how we think. Even though it may be wrong, let's be accepting to others. And I think there's a loyalty that's needed. In 1 Corinthians 13:7, it says, "If you love someone, you will be loyal to them no matter what the cost. You will always speak the best of them and always stand your ground in defending them." So there is a loyalty, not a dishonesty, but it means you do not gossip and then you impugn the best motives to anything that they do. Now, in this last section of repairing relationships, I think there are five key things that you have to do if your relationship is bad. And you can study this over, and we'll take some time, maybe a few minutes see, next time, I may not be here next time, but the next time I teach, we'll take some time here to do this. First is confession, both to God and to the other person. And those four passages of scriptures are the key. It means if you're wronged, you go to the other person. If you wrong them, you still go to the other person. The burden is always on your back. There is never an instance where you say, well, when they come to me, then I'll talk. It's always on you. So that's Matthew 5, 23 and 24, 18, 21 to 35, 18, 15 through 17, and James 5, 16. And so that means you must take the initiative. And if you will realize that the source of the bad relationship, no matter what the surface cause, the source is going to be pride. And if you do that, if the relationship is good, then you will have a clear conscience, and the result will be peace in your own life. So as we look at relationships, we need to see that God wants us to have peace with other people, and there are these levels of relationship that we will strive for, and then we can pursue these relationships. So let's close with that for today.